Hey friend, it's Stephanie Radcliffe, your host of the Stories Begin at Home podcast. I'm a homeschool mom of five from Florida, fixing up a charming 1950s home in the center of our city, adventuring with my wildlings and embracing a natural learning, living is learning lifestyle. I know firsthand the overwhelm and informational overload that we can find ourselves in these days regarding education and parenting choices. I created this space so we could inhale and exhale together. We'll chat all things homeschool, natural learning, gentle and respectful parenting, and faith-filled motherhood. But don't let any of those terms deter you. We don't judge a book by its cover over here, and all are welcome. Let's embrace our unique family stories and grow in confidence as we learn to trust ourselves and our children. So grab your coffee or tea, listen as you do dishes or change another load of laundry. Take a deep breath, grab a pen, literal or figurative, and let's rewrite freedom, joy, and connection in our homes and homeschools. All stories begin somewhere. Let's make ours begin at home.
Hey friends, on today's episode, I had such a blast chatting with Kat at Blissfully Beautiful Chaos over on Instagram. Kat's an unschooling mama of four who created her Instagram page very recently so she can share her passion about unschooling and connection parenting. She's become such a quick friend as we have had so many things in common, and I have loved hearing her perspective about why unschooling works for her kiddos with ADHD and dyslexia. Both of these are near and dear to my heart as they run on both sides of our families, and I'm learning that I have undiagnosed ADHD and had no idea until pretty recently. Kat talks to us about how a more traditional school homeschool setting didn't work for her neurodivergent learners because the expectations to get through the curriculum and lessons dysregulated them so much that then they had to spend hours recuperating, not to mention all the power struggles to get it all done. This is familiar for me as well in my journey. Kat talks to us that sometimes there are so many days and times that are unpredictable because of neurodivergence. So living a learning lifestyle gives ourselves and our children the freedom to not follow a specific method or lesson plan or curriculum, and instead frees us to give ourselves and our children what's needed in the moment. Kat talks about how her family doesn't use curriculum and what they do instead. She touches on how they learn reading without curriculum, and we talk about how the conventional way to approach a child having struggles with a specific school subject is to intensify the support and make them do it even longer. And Kat talks to us about how the opposite, letting go and giving children the time and space to learn it as the child feels safe and curious on their own to do so, has been such a beautiful journey for them. She talks about how children naturally learn and desire to do the things they see their older siblings and adults around them doing. This gives the child the control and autonomy to take over their own learning. We talk about how the little things do truly add up, even when it doesn't seem like it, especially when it's done out of joy and freedom. We talk about connection and conscious parenting and how unschooling gives us the time to spend helping our children and ourselves learn how to regulate emotions, communicate needs, demonstrate empathy, etc. And we talk about sensory tools and how to integrate them in our homes and through our days to help our neurodivergent kiddos as well. Kat talks about how unschooling and conscious parenting is not a hands-off approach, but extremely hands-on in just a very different way. We end with Kat encouraging moms who are struggling and possibly afraid to take this different path for their families to just take some time to de-school, to intentionally do things together that they enjoy and take the pressures off both themselves and their kids. She encourages families to just start to take the dive and see what happens. And along the way, we see the healing we may not have even known we needed all along as moms as well. I hope you gain wisdom, encouragement, and next steps on your journey by listening to our chat. We had a blast. I hope you enjoy. Let's get to it. One more thing. Something that helps this podcast and helps to spread the word so that other mamas looking for encouragement and natural learning, gentle parenting, and faith-filled motherhood can find us is by leaving a review. Scroll down past the episodes on your Apple Podcasts and you can find where to click for leaving a review. If you prefer Spotify, click on the three dots right under the Stories Begin at Home icon on the main show page and you can rate the show. I hope you can take the time to tell us what you're loving about the podcast, and I'm so thankful you take the time to do so. You can always share the show or a specific episode with a friend too. You can follow the show so you're notified when new episodes are published. And you can follow along over on Instagram at Stories Began at Home as I post when new episodes are published and share all things natural learning, gentle parenting, and faith-filled motherhood over there as well. You can also join the Stories Began at Home email list. I'm beyond thankful for your support. So for real this time, let's dive in to the episode. Hi.
I don't know how. Hang on just a second. Nope. Sorry.
Oh, you're fine. I always do something weird at the beginning, so it's fine.
I'm like on an iPad and I've never been on this before, like to go live. So let me.
You're fine. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Thank you, Pat, for taking the time to come on.
Thank you for having me. And this art easel is coming in handy.
So. Maybe I need that because I'm like literally just holding my phone out in front of me. My arm's going to get tired. But I have our questions on the computer, so I wanted to make sure I could see both. So for those of you who are just joining us, so what I've been doing, and I took a big break, and I'm so happy to be back, but I take Instagram Lives and I turn them into podcast episodes. So if you can't finish watching the whole time or you want to tell a friend about it or whatever, in the coming weeks, I will turn this into an episode. So definitely be on the lookout for that. So we're going to jump right in just because I know we're all moms and I'm sure we still have things to do tonight. So, all right. So Kat, tell us about yourself, where you live, your kiddos' ages, what made you begin homeschooling. And I'll go ahead and say to everybody listening, Kat and I just got connected like two weeks ago.
Yes.
We started chatting and I've just been so blessed by her and inspired by her. So I can't wait to share with you guys or for her to share about her journey to unschooling. So like your, where you started with homeschooling and then towards unschooling.
Okay. So I am a homeschool mom to four children. They're 10, almost nine. The nine-year-olds are identical twins. And then my youngest is 7. And I knew about homeschooling because I was a homeschooler myself growing up for about 5 years. And so whenever I found out we were expecting, it was in the back of my mind. You know, I'd love to homeschool my kids. I didn't know where that would lead. So we just started having conversations when my oldest was about 2. And just by the time he was kindergarten age, I asked my husband, okay, so what are we doing? And he's like, I thought we were homeschooling. I'm like, well, there you go. So we're homeschooling. So we started homeschooling and just like a normal, like rigorous homeschool, very by the book, trying to replicate school at home. And in 2020, we pivoted to an interest-led approach. At the time, I was unsure of what we were doing. I just knew that it was working for us. We were taking the day at a time. I mean, the whole world shut down, so there was no other option anyway. And I had to survive. So, the more I read and looked into other options for, you know, how can I make sure they're learning all the things? I saw so much information about interest-led learning and an unschooling approach. And it was really just dear to my heart. And then my youngest was not even in kindergarten. So he began kindergarten after we had already pivoted. And I began seeing, oh, wow, something is working with this. He is learning things. And over the course of the last few years, if you really want to look at where people, like where kids are supposed to be statistically, he is right in line with what they say. And he is my, I call him my test subject, has not ever done any formal paperwork. No formal, you know, sit down, I'm going to teach you how to read. It's all just been natural day-to-day learning and the child's reading. So.
Wow. That's amazing. That's an amazing testimony. So what made you like want to start doing the interest-led learning in the pandemic? Like what triggered that to happen?
Super overwhelmed. I have multiple with dyslexia, which we already saw those tendencies prior to the pandemic. But it was becoming, you know, several of them were feeling so many expectations and they were melting mm-hmm. down. It was taking us, hours to just recuperate and regulate so that we could even talk about what to do next. And then anytime I would bring up certain topics, deregulation would come and we would just be in a spiral.
Yeah, that's familiar. Familiar with my life as well and why we are on this path too. So I'm so excited about this topic with kiddos with ADHD and dyslexia. This is so near and dear to my heart as these both run in my family. And I, after learning about it in my family and with my children, I'm pretty sure I have ADHD too and never knew that until very recently. So this is something I'm really passionate about. So I'm excited to chat with you about how you feel unschooling serves your kiddos with these neurodivergences. So I've heard so many times and even in the past wondered myself, and on doubtful days, even now, because we all have those, I can wonder, is this really gonna work for these kids? I feel like the biggest like opinion or even doubt that I will have is, are they going to get what they need? Because aren't they the ones that need that extra support? And I was a former teacher, so that runs deep in my blood. Like, oh, well, if they're struggling, that means they or aren't getting it the way I'm teaching it, then we need to try a different method, or I need to figure out a way to teach it better or different or all of that. So how do you feel, like, from your perspective, what you're seeing with interest-led learning for these kiddos?
I see great benefits. There is so much time that's unpredictable with neurodivergence. And this lifestyle helps to alleviate the stress. It allows freedom to do whatever is necessary in the given moment, rather than the pressure to stick to an exact schedule. I've found having a predictable pattern to our day does help with the neurodivergent, but when a meltdown happens, we can easily pivot and not feel stressed that we have to check off boxes or that we're failing at our routine. And I also struggle with both ADHD and dyslexia. So this allows me more room within my personal struggles. We add a lot of like active play and that kind of a stuff, and it just helps all of us. And when I see that anybody's like getting frustrated about a specific thing that we're doing, I find other way, like we just start playing a game. I mean, maybe we'll just do tic-tac-toe or just something to divert a meltdown. And then when a meltdown happens, you know, we have time to tackle it.
Yeah. So do you feel like they need, like, how do you teach reading or to kids with dyslexia? Like, do you use curriculum or what does that look like?
So I don't use any curriculum. We just naturally talk about, you know, different letter sounds throughout the day. I mean, of course, I read to them. They read to themselves occasionally. In the beginning, I was pressuring my oldest to read a lot. I was really very like, we've got to read. Like, if you can't read, like, you're not going to survive in life. Like, that is important.
Yeah.
You have to be able to read. And I think I took all of that control in my hands thinking it's something I have to do. And it was pushing him further away. And so when the pandemic hit, I actually quit forcing him to read. And my littlest has, like I said, zero reading curriculum whatsoever. It's just been natural, like, oh, wow, the I and the R say in bird, just a natural conversation. And then when they start talking about that, well, then they start noticing, oh, wow, like the U, it starts with a Y. They just start noticing different things, and it's all natural.
Yeah.
And I usually explain it to people, you know, did you have a curriculum to teach your child how to walk,
right,
how to talk? All of those things are natural. And sometimes the way that we grew up, we feel like everything has to fit in a box.
Yeah.
And I have, obviously, I have nothing wrong with the school systems or anything like that. And everybody cannot do what I'm doing. Right. So I understand that. But there is another way.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And we are on that same journey. We too don't use a reading curriculum. We will pull a few out sometimes, like to spark ideas for me. And for like learning imitation ideas, like phonics games or activities. But it's, and this is still so new for me. I don't make them. It's completely an invitation and they take it or leave it. And that's why the invitations for me have to be very simple. Because if I go and prep a bunch of stuff, then I'm going to be triggered and irritated that they don't want to do it.
So I have like really scaled back how simple I make everything. Or if it really is for me, like, and I know that, like, I want to set up this beautiful station because I want to. Like, I want to make this corner pretty. Then I know that's for me and not really for them. But if they want to do it, great. But I don't get mad, or I try not to. I'm learning not to when they don't want to, and I definitely don't make them. But like you, I have been seeing how conversations, like, we have the best conversations in the car. We learn phonics in the car all the time from road signs and everything. And like you, my, not my youngest, but my going into kindergartner, he can't read yet. But he knows so many sounds and words, and he knows some words. I shouldn't say he can't read at all. And I'm seeing it like click, because of all the conversations we're having and listening to the older one. So yes, I'm seeing the same stuff. Okay. So, see what time it is. Let me keep digging into that a little bit more, because our next question kind of derails, kind of goes into another direction, and I want to give people a little bit more tangible. And this might go into the last one, so I don't want to go too much into it, but what would you say to someone who is like hesitating, like, especially if they have a child with ADHD or dyslexia and they are feeling like, but I have to give them this curriculum, or I have to be more intensive with them, or they're fighting me. What do I do? Like, what would you encourage them with?
I would say, just kind of take a step back and try to recognize your own expectations. Maybe write them out so you can see what expectations that you have, and just live a normal life with them for about 2 months, and try in every day to recognize if each of the things that you're doing could fall into any of the categories that you have expectations for. Maybe like see a different way. Like if you're cooking, then you're doing math.
Yeah.
So you can see what you're learning within what you're already doing. Yeah. And the more that your child trusts you, that you're not going to force things on them, the more open they are to learn from you.
Yeah.
And so then you can begin the conversation of about like, what, look what we're learning through cooking. But I wouldn't bring that up initially. I would like, it's called deschooling. So if you've never looked that up, maybe like check out deschooling, let go of all of your expectations. Honestly, it takes a really long time. You will not have it figured out overnight. No. And I mean, I'm still learning myself, because we have so many expectations for ourselves. Yeah. And when I take like a really big step back, and just look, okay, what are my expectations and where did they come from?
Mm-hmm.
And how can we pivot and see the value of what we're doing in everyday life?
Yeah. And I think that when we do that, I'm going to add to that, when that child, especially a child that is having that, the not only struggles with the like traditional formatted school curriculum, but also maybe, I mean, like in my experience, like the fight or flight, because they're so frustrated, that sometimes the natural urge from the school mindset is that, okay, we need to intensify so that they get their extra support. But what I have seen is the opposite, exactly what you're saying. And it's the hardest part on us as the parent, but to let go, because once that child starts to feel safe and like you said, trusted, like they can trust us, that's when the anxiety starts going down to where eventually they will want to on their own. It's not going to maybe be the timeline that we think it should be. And that's like another piece. But I think that has been one of my biggest things is, well, what if they never want to? That's really literally a fear of mine. But I'm already starting to see, little by little, like, they do. They are starting to see the value. And the more I shut my mouth, the more it comes out.
And then their drive, when it kicks in, it takes it a while to kick in, but when it kicks in, they realize, oh, wow, like I am in control of these things. Like I have to learn this. It's nothing that I'm, you know, like the mom is going to force down the throat. Like my oldest, after we had been doing it for a little while, he kept saying to me, just tell me quick what I need to do so I can be done. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's a life of learning. So we're always learning. And when we can have an open mind, even as adults, to maintain a life of learning, then we're so much more teachable anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Well, here's an example. So one of my kiddos who hates to read, says they hate to read. Whenever I would try to force reading with me and try to teach these tips that I thought would help, especially with the dyslexia and the eye tracking, the this and the that, would refuse to do like the finger or I even got like wiki sticks to put under the words and all of that. Well, just a few weeks ago, they decided they wanted to read on their own accord and they were doing all of those tips I told them to do, but they were fighting me when I was asking them, and then they were doing all of it when it was on their own accord. And it was just like, duh, Stephanie, like it's their own choice and they want to, and they're seeing the value in it. And that is why, but I don't think they purposely didn't want to do it with me. I think it was more the fight or flight. Like they couldn't even think about good reading tips when all they could think about was how horrible it felt to their body.
Yes. And one of my girls would always tell me, but I cannot read. I do not want to read to you because I can't read like you.
Yes. Same.
Yeah. Like, no, you're not supposed to read like me. It was like, I couldn't get her to grasp that, like, you are doing fine.
Yes.
But when it was on her terms, that's where she felt there were no expectations. Yes. And my girls so began reading to their dolls.
Yeah.
And just recently, our their nighttime routine with their dolls, they each of the twins have 6 babies. And so for at least 2 weeks, they were dressing these babies in night clothes, putting them each in their individual beds that they created, and reading each of them a different bedtime story.
That's yeah. So sweet.
It took like an hour, like this routine, but all I could see was like the positive. I'm like, another unschooling win, because they read like 6 books every night.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say too is, I think a lot of times people that hear unschooling or interest-led, they think that means hands off, like the parent. And we're gonna switch here in a minute. We're gonna get into it more, but they think, oh, you're not working on it at all. You're just letting go. You're not. But it's so the opposite. Yes, you're giving that space, but like you said, you're reading aloud all the time. You're talking all the time. Like it's very hands on, but it's just all about building the relationship with the exposure and not the coerced or expectations.
Yes, and it's a lot more involvement in different ways because it doesn't fit in a box, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, a cookie cutter thing that's like, okay, let's check off all this. It's like a constant motion of random things.
Yes. Which, and I was going to say too, the other thing I would say is I still can struggle with this, but in the very beginning of my journey with deschooling and moving into a more natural learning home, I struggled with like, are these little things adding up? Like if they're reading signs, as an example, like great, they're reading signs out and about, but that's not going to teach them to read a sentence. It is. And I wasn't putting that together, but it really does, because the more words you recognize, the more words you recognize, the more words you recognize, and it builds and it builds and it builds, especially if it's done out of joy and freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely.
So, okay. So speaking of that relationship and that letting go and the hands-on in a different way, let's talk about connection parenting and how having a sensory smart home is good for kiddos with neurodivergence, especially ADHD and dyslexia, and how you're able to do that more with unschooling.
Sensory items, they are wonderful tools in the midst of overwhelm and overstimulation. Conscious parenting, you know, takes so much effort, and the time and the fruits that I see from the effort are so beneficial. Unschooling gives us the time to be more conscious and work on conscious parenting and teaching our children strategies to cope with their own emotions and to communicate them, from empathy to better communication to being able to regulate their emotions. And it is, for me, it is liberating to watch my children put in place the things that I teach them through connection when I thought no progress was being made. I also feel that sensory tools help me get through to them in these trying moments. For example, we have sensory swings, something called belly boards. They're a very budget-friendly option. You can find them on Amazon. We use Play-Doh and clay. We do a lot of painting. I do find that art is very sensory-friendly because there are so many forms, and it allows them to be expressive. Some of mine like art and some of them don't, but if you get out like shaving cream or paint and Play-Doh and clay, somebody's going to say yes for sure.
Yeah.
And it helps them regulate if they're frustrated or just having a hard day.
Yeah.
I also will, if I have a child that's struggling with anger or frustration and I just see they're having a really rough day, one of the biggest things I will do is draw them a bath. And tell them, you know, I made you a bath. I don't give them a hard time for having a hard day. I look at my children like, you know, if I were that child, what would I need? And so for me to act frustrated or get, you know, get on to them, that isn't really, in my opinion, going to solve a problem. It's just going to create more frustration within the child who is already frustrated.
Right.
So when I draw this bath, I will bring them snacks, an iced beverage in the bath. I let them watch a show in the bath. Just if they can be in the bath, I give them toys in the bath. I mean, there's multiple things that you can do, but the water, something about the water mm-hmm. can really, when we're past regulating with other items that we have, the bath is like my final go-to for sure. So far it's worked every time. I've been doing that for like almost a year now. When I saw that it was such a big benefit. So I see great value in that. And then, my children who struggle the most with the anger, it's almost like they get such great empathy from you being so kind when they've been so rude, because they know they're being rude,
right?
And they're being, you know, they're having a bad time and they know it deep down, even if they don't admit it.
Right.
And so I do see them often come around just very thankful, that it does mean a lot to them. And several of them have told me that, you know, this really means a lot. One of them didn't sound excited one day when I told them, and they were like, oh, I don't sound excited, but I'm just really tired. But this is one of my favorite things. And so I thought that was really sweet. So that is, yeah, those things are great benefits. And I try for the sensory swings, the belly boards, those things. I try to notice when we're getting close to a breaking point. And then I don't say like, go use the belly board. Like I get the belly boards, and lately they've been putting two belly boards together with a laundry basket on top and putting pillows in it and then getting in it. And so I run them around the house like a car, but that only takes like 5 or so minutes, maybe not even. And then all of a sudden they're off playing on their own and they feel like I've connected with them. And so they begin regulating with just simple actions like that.
Yeah. And there's a comment down here, that I don't know if you just wanted to touch on. they're talking about, that reading is a nurture, not nature. So, they're saying that it's not comparable to walking, because our brains aren't inclined to reading. If that makes sense, whereas it is inclined to walking. So I just don't know if you have any thoughts, about that. I was trying to think about how I would explain it. I feel like I was, go ahead. You go ahead though. I'm interviewing you. Why am I talking so much?
When I read with my children, maybe the brain isn't inclined. I have not done the research on that, so I cannot really speak to that. But what I will say is that what we do, children want to do. What their peers are doing, they want to do. So mm-hmm. they are driven within their own self to do things that other people are capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And when they realize, oh, wow, my peers are doing, you know, those certain things, I wonder if I could try it. They try harder. So maybe our brains aren't inclined to naturally do that. I'm not really sure, like I said, but what I will say from my own experience watching my four kids, the less I pressure them to figure this reading thing out, the better they're reading. So mm-hmm. I can't really explain that part. Maybe it is the expectations that I just let go of, but I don't know. They're reading.
But really. I think that speaks to the nurture part of it, because you are nurturing that. Mm-hmm. You're just not doing it through expectations or levels or we should be here by such and such timeline.
So yeah, like my panic isn't coming through. And I think that was my problem before.
Yeah.
I was hoping not to have expectations, but the urgency in my voice and in my teaching was probably telling them, oh gosh, like I need to meet this expectation or my mom is going to be frustrated with me.
Yeah. And I know that was mine, because as much as I hoped that didn't show through, it did. My panic, my fear that, oh my, it's not clicking. What am I doing wrong? What more do we need to be doing? And I'll say too, I forget who it was that was talking about this. But if kiddos that do need those extra tips or tricks or even OT work or visual therapy kind of work and things like that, like I want to make sure like I'm not telling people that I dismiss that at all, because we totally are all into OT. That is like our life. And I feel like that's what you're saying even with your sensory stuff. But when the expectations and the coercement and stress is removed, that's when they get to naturally work on those things that are building those prerequisite skills, so that when they do get interested and the stress is off, they just soar, right? Is that
yes? And I will also add that it's not like you said earlier. You did touch on that. It's not like a hands off approach.
Yeah.
And so obviously, I'm not just letting my kids just sit around and like do nothing. Like, there is something called strewing. So if you've never heard of that, what that means is like bringing certain things out that you feel like are in your kids' interests, but maybe it takes them down a different path of that interest so they can see other things in it. It's just a lot of parent involvement. And unschooling is such a deep thing. It's just not black or white.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Let's end on talking to moms who are maybe in a rut in their homeschool, or maybe they don't homeschool and are contemplating it. How would you encourage them with following their children's interests? We talked a little bit about deschooling, but maybe we could touch on healing their inner child and how they can gain confidence in this kind of education.
So I would just tell them to take a dive into unschooling. Maybe look at it as like, I'm going to try this for, you know, 3 or 4 months just to see where it takes us. And allow yourself to enjoy it, alleviate the expectations that you have of your own self. We only get so much time with our children. So try to do things with them like cooking, art projects, and really enjoy it without the rush of what's next.
And then
you will see the joy that it truly brings when you allow these things for your own self. With no expectations, because as we all know, day to day, we all have different emotions. And so it just gives us the freedom to just enjoy the ride.
Yeah. And I think that touches on the inner child, the little person inside of us that we get to go along that ride and joy and freedom alongside of them. Right?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, it definitely helps heal anything that has, you know, stressed you out. And actually things come up that maybe you didn't even realize.
Yes.
When you do this sort of a thing. And for me, that is so healing. And then I just keep in the back of my head, if I were that little child, what would I need?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that's a question that I'm working through with my coach right now is, what do they need? What do I need? And even like a broader scope, what do I feel like most moms need? And like, just rolling all of that around has been so helpful in a moment. What do they need? What would I have needed? Yeah, so good. Well, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I hope this has been really helpful to everybody listening, and feel free to, I will post this live on my feed So feel free to comment with any questions. We'd love to answer them. And of course, like I said, in the next several weeks, as I have some recordings before this one, but in the next several weeks, we'll get this up on the podcast too. So thanks, Kat, for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.